This episode is brought to you by Undeniably Dairy. Dairy farmers are more than farmers. They're climate caretakers. They see water as a precious resource. Most farmers recycle water up to four times, from chilling the milk to irrigating the crops. And some even use technology to turn manure into renewable energy. To learn more about what dairy farmers are doing to make their farms more sustainable, visit usdairy.com.
Brooks Running has a new shoe for you runners out there. Did you hear that? Better turn up your volume. In fact, turn it up to the max. Introducing the all-new Ghost Max. It's got all kinds of things to make your knees and ankles feel protected, like Max Cushion, Max Soft Landings with DNA Loft V2 Foam, and Max Smooth Rides with their Glide Roll Rocker. Feel better on your run with Ghost Max. Learn more at brooksrunning.com.
Hey, hey, you guys. Welcome, welcome. You are listening to the Oh Crap Potty Training podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Glowacki. I wrote the book, Oh Crap Potty Training, and Oh Crap, I Have a Toddler. And today we're doing an interview with Sinead Gavin. This is part of our series of interviews that I decided to do because I think it's so helpful to hear other people's experience, whether or not they followed my book to the letter, whether they tweaked something. But everybody's situations are so different that I thought that interviewing people would be the best way to get more and more stories out there to give you mamas in the trenches hope. Welcome, Sinead. Why don't you introduce yourself and let us know how many kids you have, what's your deal in life, what do you do, that kind of thing.
I'm Sinead. I'm 45. I had a very surprise baby when I turned 40 and I found out when I was 6 months pregnant.
Oh, jeez.
I thought 25 years of nannying would prepare me. It did not. And I find it really, really tough. My son is 4.5 now. We potty trained him when he was 2 and we were in lockdown. And I just had to seize the moment of being stuck in doing nothing and make the most of that situation, basically. I have used your book for 5 years previous for work and just found it a game changer. And actually, I think it was more for me, giving me a script and giving me something to focus on during the chaos. But yeah, I thought it was brilliant and it worked so well with him.
Yeah, during the chaos of lockdown or during the chaos of being a nanny?
Both. Mainly being a nanny, I guess. You know, it's always quite easy with other people's children, but parents find it hard with their own. So I found with nannying, having a book to pass to parents and say, this is what you need to do over the weekend, really helpful, as opposed to feeling a bit like you're starting again every Monday morning.
Yes.
Just the inconsistency with childcare, I guess. And I think it's something everyone faces.
That is, you know, I've heard from a lot of clients that even in daycare, they buy copies for everybody. And they're like, here, why don't you just train the whole class? And that can be really helpful too, because like you said, passing on information, even when I work with clients, I have to get like both parents. I work with a walkie-talkie app and I have to get both parents on board because I'm like, no, you got to hear it right from the horse's mouth here. You can't, because what it's like that game of telephone, right? Like you start passing on information. Yeah. So when did you start with your son? I know you were in lockdown and you said he was 2, but like, was he exactly 2?
I think it was the March. He just turned 2. He was ready. But one thing I had been doing was putting him straight on the toilet every night before bath, and the potty was around. So what I did do was took a week to hide the potty and forget everything that we'd learned before then and start from scratch, like you say in your book. And I think that was a really important part for us, that it had been very casual up until that point, and that probably wasn't a great idea.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, that you have to like give it a little time to shake out, because if you practice inconsistency, you need to clear that, because it's hard to jump in like, okay, now we're going to be consistent for no other reason than I said so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, do you know what? Even doing it for work, I'm very confident at work, but for myself and for my own family, I have conflicting thoughts a lot, like, you know, work head and then mum head. And I had to have that time to really get it straight in my head. And I had like, you know, posters all over the kitchen of what we were doing. And I was so confident going into it that there was no chance this was going to fail. And I swear that's the key for me in your book, that it's all about mum confidence and us being ready, not the child. Children are always ready. They adapt so easily. It's all about us.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. It is so much us. And it's like you said, that I know exactly what you mean with the work brain. And I tell parents all the time, like, I can come into your house and potty train your kid in 6 hours, but I don't have the emotional investment. You know, like as parents, we have so much invested in our kids, and we always have, I said this in the last interview I did too, is that we have this idea too, that like we're messing it up. You know what I mean? And so like, what if I screw this kid up? And so we let other thoughts come in, and it's really hard to be like super confident. So at least you had the backup of work. You were like, well, I know this worked.
Yeah.
I think that confidence is so important too. Like I tell people, you've got to shut down. Don't go on social media. Like, I don't even care if you use my book, but get a plan and like shut the rest of the world out, because you're just going to get so much conflicting advice that you start getting paralyzed.
There's just so much advice now. Everyone has an opinion on everything, and it is so daunting if you let it come in. And it's really hard not to, so hard. You have to be sure on your plan and stick to it no matter what. And it's really hard.
I think that it's that way with food too, because people now are like, what does even eating healthy mean? You know, like, oh my God, I'm so confused because there's so much information. Yeah. And I say that about my book. I don't think I have like, you know, if you know my history as a potty trainer, I interviewed hundreds of moms my mom's age and just sort of weeded out the abusive practices. So my book is very old school, actually. I don't think I have anything new about it, except that I like reframed it for moms with too much information, because that's our problem today as moms. You know, you can go on Instagram and you can be sure, like, I knew I was never going to spank my child, you know, but then somebody comes in and is like, well, they just need a good whack on the butt. And like, even though you're like super confident, you're like, do they?
A little seed of doubt. If you have any doubt, then it really gets in there. And as soon as you wobble, that's it. You might as well give up.
Yeah, because the kids wobble too, right? Like they're going to pick up on us. So walk us through, how did it go? Like, was it like textbook or?
So we were in, obviously, which made it easier. He found stage one really, really easy, and that was fine. He was really shocked the first time he did a wee with nothing on his bottoms. And I grabbed him and shot him over to the potty and was like, that's it. We've got to get it in. Well done. And the script was really important to me. It was a while ago now. What was your line about not praising them and just, you know, next time get it in the potty.
Yep.
Remember, next time get it in the potty. And that's all I said. I had my husband like trained, just really nonchalant. No, don't make a big deal out of it. And it just worked really well. The bit that we had a little bit of trouble with was putting pants on, as in underwear, going from commando. He was commando for about 4 months.
Oh, yeah, because you were inside,
Yeah. So as soon as, you know, we were going for a walk every day, but other than that, we weren't doing anything. So as soon as we started venturing out and going to like skate parks or the woods and stuff, you know, we had so many poos in bags in the woods. But yeah, no, he did great. It was just tricky getting the underwear on.
And what solved that for you guys? Did he first wet his pants? Is that what happened?
He never wet them. It was all, I think he did one poo, but it was more that he didn't feel it coming. So he would panic. And like that little kind of worried look on his face. And I'd be like, don't worry, we'll get there. It was almost like a security blanket. And it meant that he wasn't quite as aware of the sensation when it was coming.
Okay, that's interesting. I would think you did have, if he panicked, I feel like he almost had a different sensation. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those that really leaves it to the last minute. It's still the same now.
So the anus is like starting to open. He's like, oh my God, I got to get somewhere.
Yeah. Now, life's too much fun. There's too much going on. I haven't got time to waste on the loo, that kind of kid. Yeah.
It is tricky for a lot of kids because they are busy. They're toddlers. They've got stuff to do, man. You know, I get so mad at those like 3-day potty trainings. Like you had a dream scenario almost. And still there were some glitches, you know, like our kids don't learn everything in 3 days. That's tricky. How was lockdown for you guys? Just on a personal note, because the UK was strict, right? You can only be for like an hour.
Well, there was two trains of thinking. I think I was in the, if I don't get out of this house with my 2-year-old, I'm not going to be in a good space for anyone. So we were escaping to the woods a lot, but we didn't get in a car for like 6 months. We weren't allowed in a car. We didn't see my mum. My son is really close to my mum, and we didn't see her for the full 6 months, which was really, really brutal. And yeah, I mean, there are major repercussions now for him. And I think he was probably at an okay age for lockdown. But socially, he's a bit of a loner. I don't know if he would have been anyway. He's an only child. So quite possibly, I don't know.
Yeah. It was tricky. Yeah. Like you said, though, it seems like he was at a good age.
He was. I mean, bouncing off the walls. It made me laugh whenever I'm looking on Instagram and like podcasts and stuff, and people were giving tips on how to handle a toddler inside. You know, in America, you guys have such big houses and we're in a matchbox.
Yes.
It was so difficult. It was just, you know, wrap them up, snowsuits, get them out. But inside, it was hard, really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny because when we in March of 2020, when it shut down, I think it was like March 17th, I remember there was like the week of panic buying and I was like, oh no, this shit's hitting the fan for sure. And then I didn't know because businesses were closing and I had no idea, you know, like it's a panic. And those first couple of months, we were like, is this going to kill off 50% of the population? Like we didn't know, you know? And I was like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody's going to want to potty train and, you know, this panic. And they had to do an emergency printing of my book because everybody potty trained because they were like, well, we're home.
Oh, well, how could you not? It's too good. Life was at a standstill. It was just too good an opportunity. When would we ever get it again kind of thing? So, yeah.
Yeah. And then it was funny because I only take a set amount of clients because, you know, otherwise I get overloaded. I'll confuse people. So I don't take very many clients so I can give very personal care. And there were so many people that needed help. And I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. It's not like I have any sort of life. I have my son who was old enough to be on video games with all his friends, you know? Yeah. And I was like, so I had spreadsheets on my wall of like, you know, I took way more clients than I normally do, but like who's pooping when? I had poop times. And it was like this like mad scientist wall with like butcher paper on it. Super funny. And so now, did you go back to work as a nanny? Is he... Or are you a full-time
owner? So before I had him, I trained as a newborn care consultant, which is also called a maternity nurse, but it's someone who helps parents with newborns in the home. So I do night work. I do 3 nights a week and my current clients are 5-week-old twins and I'm so sleep deprived.
Oh my God, you must be.
I'm so sleep deprived and I'm trying to do a nighttime training for my son who is still not showing any signs, but I'm trying to be determined and get there. But anyway, we've had 10 nights of following exactly what you say in your book and I'm having no luck whatsoever, but I'm trying not to give up.
Well, hey, let's work through that on the call because I'm sure other people are struggling with it. How old is he now?
He's 4.5.
Okay. There's no question about bladder capability at that age, just right?
He can go an entire day drinking and not peeing. So I don't worry about the bladder issue that you mentioned in your book. Yeah.
Yep. And so what are you guys doing? Like, what are you...
So what we're doing, we've got a chart and everything that I fill out. He goes to bed around 6:37. I wake him at 9. He's always dry then. He does a tiny wee at that point. And then I set an alarm for 2:00. He's sometimes wet at that point. And then he still manages a wee on the potty. And in the morning, out of 10 nights, he's been dry once. So he is saving all his wees for nighttime.
Is he still releasing during the day? So you said he can go all day drinking. He can go all day drinking and not peeing. Is that like the norm or is that like, you know, he's capable of doing?
He's at school now, so I don't know what goes on, but he's terrible at drinking fluids anyway.
Okay.
Always has been. He has 1 cup of water at school in the day. And since we've been doing this, he's been drinking that by the end of every school day. And then he barely has even, you know, a small cup with his meal and he goes to bed, no issue. The upside down pyramid thing is working perfectly. There's no fight there at all because he just doesn't want to drink.
All right. So a couple of things I would try is I would definitely try double pee before he goes to bed. And this is where you have red solo cups in the UK, right? I don't know. Sometimes.
Yes.
A container other than the potty can sometimes be really helpful for that last pee because like there's the impetus of filling the cup. Like once you put a cup under their penis, it's a game. It's a game because I have to fill the cup. So they tend to empty more. And plus little boys touching their penis, watching the pee come out, like there's nothing better, right? Like we know this. So it can be a super great way to release right before bed. And what I say is like, when you're starting the routine, okay, go to the potty, let's, you know, do all our things and then read the stories, pajamas, brush teeth, do whatever, and then do another one so that you can try to get that reserve out. And a lot of times that second pee, a lot of parents think that kids stall bedtime because, you know, they just don't want to go to sleep. But most of the time it's because they finally decompressed And now they have shit to say to you. Now they want to talk about their day. It's not just a manipulation to avoid sleep. It's like, okay, now everything's coming to me. And so same thing with P is he can relax because now he's not so busy. He's relaxed and he's fine.
Vaginas are absolute magic. And Ollie is here to give them the respect they deserve. That means shame-free supplements made with clinically studied ingredients to keep your pH in check and your pleasure a priority. Put yourself on top. Go to Ollie.com today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
But I also, what I would do if I were you is I would adjust that 2 a.m. pee to maybe like 1. That 2 a.m. to like 1 or 12:30, because if he's sometimes wet, it just might be just a little too late from that 9 a.m.
I forgot to mention something probably really important, and I know already what your answer is going to be. He's still in pull-ups, which I know is a nappy, and I haven't taken them away because I do nights. It's really tricky. I don't work every night, and we're away this weekend, but Tuesday night is our very last nappy that we've got in the drawer. He knows that's it, gone. So I think come Tuesday, once I'm still waking him just to get his body used to waking up and everything. So yeah, I mean, I think he just doesn't feel the pee. He's always been a really, really heavy sleeper. If he falls asleep now in the car, he nearly always pees.
Yeah. He might not feel the wetness that can contribute to it, but a lot of deep sleepers don't feel it. I mean, they'll be freezing cold with their teeth chattering and they'll still be asleep. You know what I mean? So if he's a really deep sleeper, he may not feel it, but I'd do more of I go bottomless. Once you use that last pull-up, I would have him be bottomless because it's like an unconscious reminder. The diaper is like a muscle memory. And so it's just that's what I use it for. So there's kind of no pull to change it. And you can, various people use various things. I like Chucks or Piddle Pads. You can get them on Amazon. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. We work with newborns. And I say like duct tape a few to the bed. So if there is an accident, you just rip it off and he goes back to sleep.
Start again. Yeah.
Because that's the only sort of unconscious reminder you're going to have.
And do you think from 1:30 all the way till kind of 6:37 is too long to, I'm not going to have to do a third wake up, am I?
No, I never recommend a third wake up. And if you get to the point of a third wake up, you've gone too far. Yeah, that's not working. And like night training is tricky because like at 4.5, we can expect his bladder can hold it. The biggest thing, though, is there have been bedwetters. There have been bedwetters since the beginning of time. They're not in the huge numbers that they are now because a lot of parents, they're tired. You know, I used to be judgy about this, but I'm not anymore. Like, you're exhausted. And so you don't necessarily want to attend to night training, you know. They won't go to college still wetting their bed. They might.
This other thing is that everybody says it. Everybody, even in my field of work, oh, the hormone hasn't kicked in yet. This didn't used to be a thing 20 years ago.
No. So we can talk about the hormone. I started to hear about that about 10 years ago. And I was like, what the hell is this hormone thing? And here's the thing is nobody could extrapolate on it. Like the pediatricians couldn't talk about it. They were like the hormone thing. And I was like, what is this hormone thing?
I need to know more.
Yeah. I hired a couple of doctors. We went through some abstracts. So it's called ADH. It's the antidiuretic hormone. And it's released with melatonin. And so the antidiuretic hormone is what is responsible for us peeing less at night. So even me, I pee like 6 times an hour. I just have no bladder control whatsoever. So I'm always peeing and at night I wake up once to pee. So that hormone is being released. It's tightly linked to melatonin. So a lot of times for night training, I suggest earlier bedtimes. His bedtime's perfect, but a lot of kids are going to bed at like 8 or 9 o'clock. Then that means the melatonin's not releasing, which means that ADH isn't being released as well. So there's that. Some kids grow into this hormone, right? Other kids can stay dry at 16 months through the night, right? And so you can grow into this hormone. But by 4.5, I think the hormone should be being released. It doesn't look like you guys, especially for 10 days with a pull-up, you guys aren't in a mess. Like I wouldn't look at this and be like, whoa, just let's diaper and take a break. When night training is a mess, it's like peas everywhere. You're getting 3 or more peas a night. You're never catching them, or they're releasing when you wake them and there's additional peas. Yeah. Then we look at, okay, the hormone might not be being released. For some people, that hormone never comes into play. And so they need an exogenous form of it. There's a pill you can take.
That's where I think the myth has come from.
Yes. So you can take that exogenous thing. And that often happens with bedwetters, right? Yeah. And they do have exogenous things for bedwetters, for kids who are chronic bedwetters, you know, after the age of 5, I think is when they start diagnosing them. That way they can go 24 hours with that hormone. And so if they want to do sleepovers, or they're going to your mom's house or something like that, so they don't have to be embarrassed that they're still using a pull-up or something like that. But generally speaking, it's rare for that hormone to not be released. And I would look at that if somebody's trying to night train at like 3 and we're seeing just a disaster and we're really sure that everything else is in place, then I would say, okay, maybe we're looking at that. And it's genetic. So I often ask, is anybody anywhere in your family a bedwetter? And if there is, I say, well, you're just swimming upstream without a paddle. The difference is like that existed for a long time, but it was a problem. So, and not that I want to shame any children, but you had to go out of your way. When I was that age, you had to go out of your way to find a solution. Now you can walk into any market and find pull-ups. So we've sort of skewed the perception, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, you're fine if you're a large portion of my clients are pediatricians who have 8-year-olds in pull-ups. And I'm like, well, no, that's not the hormone not being released. You know what I mean?
No.
Right. And so I always look, I kind of call myself like a social archaeologist. I go, why is it so different now? But when you don't realize, you don't realize your perception when you walk into a market and see pull-ups to a size 10, you say, well, we're a size 4. We have plenty of time, you know?
Yeah.
I would say just definitely keep going. And you've got a lot of things in your court. You know, you're going to give up the pull-ups. You know, if he doesn't like fluids, I think he really is just saving it just because he's so busy at this age. So that double P really should help.
Okay, amazing. I'll do it. I'll let you know. I've got one of those elephants for going in the car and stuff that you pop his penis in the spout and collect it.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
We've never used it, so we can try that. Okay, amazing. Thank you so much.
Sweet. I think that'll be really helpful for people listening. But before, I need to find out more about, you didn't find out you were pregnant till you were 6 months pregnant. This always fascinates me when women don't know they're pregnant. So you must have been still like leading, or?
Especially because of my job. I work with babies. It's ridiculous. So I hadn't had a period in 15 years. I had lots of kind of health diagnosis that explained that. So then I was with a new partner. We met online dating. I was 38. You know, it was all like very exciting. I assured him, don't worry, I can't get pregnant. And then I literally was that guy that went to the doctor with a swollen tummy saying, I'm losing weight, I'm losing my hair, I'm spotty, but I've got a big belly, what's going on? And they were like, do you think you might be pregnant? And I was like, no, I don't have estrogen in my body, I can't get pregnant. And they were like, okay, she examined me, obviously felt that I was pregnant straight away and said, you know, would this be good news or bad news? We might need to do a pregnancy test. And I was like, I'm turning 40. It's all I've ever wanted. But no, this would be a shock. And I went off, came back with my urine. And she was like, Sinead, you're very, very pregnant. We need to send you off for a scan today. And I was just like, oh my God. Found out that day I was 23 weeks pregnant and was having a boy. I wasn't living with my partner. It was just absolute madness.
Oh my God. What a little miracle baby though.
Yeah. I don't let my mum say that.
Did you feel him move or kick or anything? And you just thought, like, what the heck? Like, I got cramps.
So the movement I put down to wind. I was doing keto at the time and I just put it down to wind.
Isn't it amazing what our minds can do? Because you hear these stories of women who like go into labor.
I know.
What's up? And they're like having a baby.
I know. So I had sore boobs, sore nipples, my hair was falling out, all of it. But I just thought keto is renowned for rebooting hormones. And I just thought, I'm trying to have a period. This is my body trying to have a period. Didn't expect that for a millisecond. I was still in shock when I had him. I was still in shock about 2 years ago.
Oh my God, and then he's true. And then we go into like lockdown with a global pandemic and you're like, what the hell is my life?
I think I needed that to calm down. I think I literally gave birth and became like that kind of excess energy, you know, like just nervous energy. So for me, lockdown was a blessing in disguise. It really calmed me down.
Calmed and centered. You had time to like be with your baby. Yeah.
and just stop rushing, just stop being busy, just stop, you know, how you say in all your podcasts about we just keep on the treadmill. And it just made it force me to calm down. And I have no guilt now having pajama days or letting him have the iPad for a few hours and just looking after us better than I was. Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. And then when you're 40 too, like, so I had Pascal when I was 38 and I said, there's a reason you really should be doing this around 23 because you don't know better and you don't care. You're like, yeah, whatever. By 38, I had already had all my therapy. I knew the damage parents can do to kids. I was like, apologizing every breath, you know, like so concerned. Yeah. And then that treadmill too, like, I always tell this story about when I started homeschooling Pascal and he sprung it on me. We had talked about it, but one day I came home. I had walked the dog in the morning. It was mid school year. He was in first grade and I came home and he was like crying very silently. And he said, can we do that homeschool thing now? And I was like, I don't have enough colored pencils. I don't have enough maps or notebooks or whatever homeschooling people do. And you must've been the same way. Like,
I was, but I was also really cocky. I was like, oh, the kid part, I've got it down. I know what I'm doing. Oh my goodness. No, I was just, it really threw me, like the frazzled mum brain thinking for everyone and not so much the responsibility. Yet it's the mental health thing. I've had quite a lot of therapy. And before I found out I was pregnant, I was going through EMDR, which is
EMDR. Yeah, yep.
Amazing. I felt like I was really on this intense journey myself. And then I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared for raising a child and him not being fucked up, basically. And just that weight on my shoulders every day is my biggest thing. Like, you know, just making sure emotionally he has his shit together, basically.
Yeah. Well, you have to ease up on that. You know, my solution, right? You've heard my solution on the podcast.
Go on.
My parenting podcast. Oh, I don't save for college. I save for therapy. So I'm going to pay for his therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
there's no avoiding it.
But also, shit, if my parents had offered to pay for even half, like for the damage they did, like that would have been really helpful, you know? And I also think like they are probably all going to need therapy at some point, you know, because the worst thing that ever happened to you is the worst thing that ever happened to you. Whether you had an abusive childhood or you didn't get a cherry red Mustang on your 16th birthday. It's just the worst thing that ever happened to you.
Relative, yeah.
Yeah. We just have to be easy on ourselves because otherwise we'll drive ourselves crazy.
Yeah, I'm always too hard on myself. Also, in the UK, people still don't really talk openly about getting counselling and getting help. It's so different to the States in that respect.
Oh, yeah. I did most of my therapy in San Francisco where we talked about therapy like people talk about sports. Like, oh, what'd you do today? Oh, I did EMDR and Reiki. Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. Is there anything else you wanted to add or give hope to other mamas?
No, I don't think so. I honestly think the best thing about your book is the confidence and shutting out, especially I love the part where you say not to tell the world you're doing it. Attack it first and tell them afterwards. Don't put that added pressure on yourself by telling the world that you're doing it.
Yeah, because then you end up screwing yourself. Yep.
Yeah. And then you get so triggered every time someone asks you how it's going and you're like, you know, you're not sure yourself how it's going. But yeah, I just think the confidence is key. I think it's all about us. We have to be ready. We have to have a plan in place. I'm quite a proactive person. I need it all written out. I need to know what I'm doing. And then I'm wobble proof. But yeah, I just think it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. In my book, it's Facebook, but now it should be like Instagram or TikTok. Yeah, you can't announce it because like you said at the beginning of our interview, I don't know why everybody is such an expert about this. Like no one would ever look at your like 11-month-old and say, oh, they're walking? Oh, you're letting them walk? Like nobody is an expert on any other milestone, but this one brings people out of the woodwork. And literally,
everybody wants an easy solution. No one wants to put in the hard graft. Everyone wants an easy way out. And that's what everyone's looking for when they're like, how do you do it? How did you do it? They just want the easy route, but there isn't one.
Yeah, I just did a reel on that. There is no trick. And I'm constantly amazed at how people will actually come onto my page and say, listen, I have two kids and this is what you have to do. And I was like, really? Because I worked with 1,200 last year. Like, I don't... Like, because you did it times under your parenting, like how you feel like, you know, and of course, share tips and tricks, you know, anytime. I mean, that's why we're interviewing you guys, but I don't. It's obnoxious to me how many people like are like, well, this is how you do it.
The experts,
Yeah.
We're all here to learn still.
Exactly. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time, Sinead. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you all for having me. Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.